This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
Oh yeah, a little Johnny Cash this morning. Boy, did I love Johnny Cash. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Friday morning, November 1st already. By the way, All Saints Day on the Christian calendar. In a few minutes, Daniel Weislaw of the Pacific Legal Foundation is going to join us, and we're going to talk about why 70% of millennials say they would vote for a socialist. What? Indeed. So stay tuned for that. And we are going to tell you who the whistleblower in the Trump Ukraine impeachment investigation probably is. I mean, we're going to give you the name and the political bias of this guy. So stay tuned for that. And now that Congress has voted to formally continue this impeachment process, whatever the hell that means, we're going to take a look at what mainstream America thinks about all of this stuff with the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceraci. That should be very, very interesting. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, this being All Saints Day, the top 10 most influential saints. Yes, indeed, they have come up with a list on that one. The top 10 most influential saints. So you'll want to hear that one. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. For the best haircut in Tampa Bay, I am telling you, you got to get to Dunedin and get over to the Overcash Plaza, which is just north of Route 580 on Overcash Drive. You will get a great haircut. You will get it at a great price. You will love the place. It's a beautiful little place. It's a tidy place. You'll enjoy the conversation, but mainly, great haircut. Andrew's Master Barbershop. And also, we come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., but sometimes you can't hear us at those hours. So go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, and you'll be able to listen to any of our shows that we've done recently by clicking on the podcast button. Big Ed has all our shows set up on there for you. You'll know ahead of time who our guest is going to be in the top 10. OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay, boy, we got a lot going on this morning. And I want to start off by telling you the name of the guy that is the whistleblower. Most likely the whistleblower. I would say that the chances are 90% that this guy is the whistleblower. His name is Eric Sciaramella. And he is 33 years old. He is a registered Democrat. He was held over from the Obama White House. He previously worked with Joe Biden and former CIA Director John Brennan. Brennan, by the way, a vocal critic of Donald Trump, who helped initiate the collusion investigation. Sciaramella left his National Security Council post in the White House's West Wing in mid-2017. Why? Concerns about negative leaks to the media. He has since gone back to CIA headquarters, which, by the way, is in Langley, Virginia. A former National Security Council official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said, quote, he was accused of working against Trump and leaking against Trump. Now you know why Schiff, Adam Schiff, does not want to release the name of this guy. Okay?
Was this guy there for the phone call?
No. No.
Okay, well,
no. He got a third hand.
Oh, so you heard it from somebody?
He heard it from somebody who heard it from somebody.
Now, I never went to law school, but isn't that called hearsay?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely could not bring
even it. Even Judge Judy would throw that out.
Judge Judy would throw it out. Every judge would throw out hearsay. You can't use it in court.
She'd cut him off and say, I don't want to hear what you heard.
Not only that, she'd probably sentence him to a few years in the hoosegow. But
maybe
yeah, you're right.
Maybe that's who Trump should get on his staff somewhere. She'd scare everybody.
Well, what about that Fox News judge, that Jeanine Pirro?
Yeah.
What do you think of her?
I think she's a young Judge Judy.
Yeah.
I think she's pretty straight
forward. I like her.
Yeah.
She's no nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I would not want to be a bad guy or a guilty person and stand in front of her in a court.
But you got to wonder how much of it's Hollywood, you know, in front of the camera.
Yeah, there's always that emotional fake outrage that people will display, or energy. I tend to believe that she's very sincere from what I've seen.
I just can't even imagine being a grandkid of Judge Judy. You steal that candy? Yes, ma'am. And three before that?
You know, it's funny, we're getting way off the subject, but have you ever noticed that some of the strictest disciplinarian types end up having kids that are absolutely the exact opposite?
Yeah.
It happens all the time. I don't know. It's because you've got that rebellious gene, and I think that disciplinarian pounding on your head all the time releases the rebellious gene. Okay. All right. Now, Ed, I don't even know. I can't remember what I was talking about. Oh, yeah, I was talking about the whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we said, the guy's got anti-Trump written all over him, okay? It's basically anti-Trump. Also, Eric Sciaramella, huddled for guidance with Adam Schiff's committee. Before coming out as a whistleblower, he huddled with their staff, with Schiff's staff, including former colleagues also held over from the Obama administration. Also, listen to this. I mean, the guy couldn't be more anti-Trump. He worked with the Democratic National Committee operatives who dug up dirt on the Trump campaign during the 2016 election. And one particular operative, he invited into the White House for meetings. Excuse me. And that operative was a woman, Alexandra Chalupa. Is a chalupa something you can order at a taco stand?
It's with or without sauce.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, her name is Alexandra Chalupa. But she's not Hispanic. She's a Ukrainian-American who supported Hillary Clinton. So why am I giving you this information? First of all, am I 100% sure? No. But 90% sure this is the guy. And I got it from Real Clear Politics. Now, you'll notice that you won't hear this name. That's probably the first time you heard that, Ed, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay. You won't hear that information, but everybody in Washington knows that that's the guy.
Well, that's Washington for you. Best kept secret.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's kind of all you got to know. Now you know why Adam Schiff doesn't want to make this guy public, doesn't want to interview him anymore. The guy is 100% stained.
He better not have any dark secrets in his past, you know, like dating 13-year-old girls or anything like that, because it's all going to come out.
Or 13-year-old boys.
Yeah,
you never know, right, these days. Indeed. You are right, sir. Let's take a break. Let's do a complete turnabout. Let's talk about socialism and millennials with Daniel Weislaw.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hey there, I'm Lynn About Town. Are you looking for something different for your talk radio? Then tune in to our show, Talk of the Town, every Tuesday night from 5 to 5:30. Stay up to date with what's happening in your Tampa Bay, or call in to become part of the conversation. Whatever your poison, I promise you, this one won't kill you, but it'll definitely make you feel good. Talk of the Town, where good guys and good news meet. See you Tuesday at 5 p.m.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on the first day of November already. Holy cow, a little chill in the air where you are, possibly. Well, we're delighted to have Daniel Weislaw, an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation, join us this morning. And we're going to talk with Daniel about this very scary piece of information. 70% of millennials say they would vote for a socialist. 70%. Daniel, welcome to Freedom Works.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
It's absolutely our pleasure to have you. Daniel, let's get right into it.
Sure.
There is a new YouGov Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation survey of more than 2,000 Americans 16 years and older, I assume. Is that the millennials?
I think that would be.
Okay. Yeah. And 70% of them, 70%, that's, I think 20% say for sure they would vote on one, and another 50% say they would seriously consider voting on a person if they were a socialist. Now, when I was, I'm from the baby boomer generation, and from, I can tell you, that socialism was an obscenity word when I was growing up. Nobody would admit to being a socialist or even thinking about it. What's gone on here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think back then socialism was viewed very synonymously with communism. And, you know, we saw sort of what was going on in the rest of the world, you know, the other, you know, superpower being the USSR at the time, what was going on over there. More recent memories were at hand of Mao's China and such. And so communism was viewed sort of more synonymously with socialism, whereas here now today, I think we have a problem of definitions in some sense. And I think there was some polling done, oh gosh, it might be closer to a decade old now, by the I think it was the New York Times had published it, that said that when you actually asked millennials and used a definition of socialism that included the government owning firms, owning industries, and operating the economy versus free market economy, that it was a much lower number of millennials who supported it. And so they see,
in other words,
you know, candidates like Bernie Sanders talking about it, and they think, oh, well, you know, it just means free health care.
In other words, they didn't know what socialism is.
I think that's part of the problem, yeah.
It's ignorance, right?
It's ignorance. I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, and sort of a disrespect for the private property rights foundation that this country has been founded upon and that sort of the Constitution is really supposed to protect against.
Now, also, listen to this. Half of millennials, 50%, and half of Generation Z, which one is that? That's younger than millennials, right? I don't know.
I think so,
yeah. Anyway, 51% of Generation Z and 50% of millennials have a somewhat or very unfavorable view of capitalism. Now, from the same standpoint, I guess they don't really know what capitalism is. Do they think capitalism is a bad rich person out to do in his employees? Is that kind of is that the visual they're getting?
I think it is, and I think they look at capitalism and they think when they hear that word capitalism, they think of these large firms like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, sort of in crony capitalism, which is very different, of course, than capitalism. Crony capitalism is large firms going to the government and asking for them to pass regulations that make it more expensive and more difficult for competitors to compete against them. Because if you look at things, for instance, if you look at the term economies of scale, it is a term that means that you have fixed costs and you have variable costs, and the bigger you are, even if you have big fixed costs, you can spread them out over many units of services and goods provided. And when you increase regulations, you increase compliance costs, which increase fixed costs. And that makes it actually more difficult for the firms that are just starting up to compete against you. And that's why you have people like Mark Zuckerberg going to Congress and saying, yes, please regulate me, because it helps him compete against his rivals.
Right.
This is not capitalism. This is firms using the government to interfere in the marketplace, which is actually the opposite of capitalism. And that's, I think, what people are looking at.
We're talking, with Daniel Weislaw. He is an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation. We're talking about this very scary survey showing that 70% of millennials say they would consider voting for a socialist. We've got, as you mentioned, Elizabeth Warren, and we got Bernie Sanders, and we got a bunch of other people in the Democratic Party that, if they're not socialist, they are espousing it. I guess the only one that I could point to that's a little bit more non-socialist is the front runner, Joe Biden. But Elizabeth Warren, if she's not on his heels, she's very close now. And she's basically, she won't say she's a socialist. But my goodness, she's proposed. She just came out, as you may know, with the cost to her Medicare plan and supposedly a way to pay for it, which is ridiculous anyway, because it can't be paid for. It's about $52 trillion over 10 years. But so the government runs, you know, in her way of thinking, our entire healthcare system. It will cost over $50 trillion over 10 years. Nobody has any way of figuring out how to pay for it. You could take every penny from every wealthy person from $1 million on up, and you still couldn't pay for it. So I don't know where to go on this, Daniel, but I guess we have to figure out a way of re-educating people.
Yes. I think that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is, and I am a millennial, and I was an undergraduate studying business. And I remember in my classes, you know, the professor would pose a problem and say, oh, well, you know, how do we solve this? And of course, he's asking for market solutions. And of course, the hands shoot up. And the answer is always like, oh, well, this legislation would do it, or that legislation would do it. Oh, and, you know, the professors would get frustrated. I would get frustrated sitting there. And it's just, it's this different way of thinking that is molded by, I think part of the problem is the full-time legislator. The idea that being a legislator is now a primary career all over the country, really, in a lot of states, in the federal government. And the solution is always looked at as, well, more legislation. But, you know, our Constitution was framed in such a way to try and protect against this tyranny of the majority,
exactly,
which is, I think, what democratic socialism is. There's actually, in the Constitution, in Article 4, Section 4, is the guarantee clause, which actually guarantees a Republican form of government, which is antithetical to a socialist one.
It is indeed. I mean, you're right. There's a combination of things going on, though. I think there's, I would start with the schooling. When I would, again, I'm from the years when when we went to school, socialism was considered a bad word. I mean, you didn't even have to get into an argument because there wasn't anybody around that would admit to even being a socialist, you know. But it was considered, like you said, it was almost like faux communism, and because of Karl Marx, and you know, we would get some history into it. Okay, so now They've airbrushed out all of the bad things about socialism, apparently, from what I can understand. Now, you tell me, being a millennial, as you grew up,
yeah.
Did you hear bad things from your teachers about socialism as you grew up?
I think it was more of putting it on an equal footing. It was more okay. About a discussion and debate about different forms of government and what was better. And then, you know, I took advanced placement classes when I was in high school. But if you look at I think there's a big problem itself with just the government running the public education system alone. If you look at actually the model that all these socialists love so much, which is the democratic socialists, so-called, love so much, which is the Nordic model or the Scandinavian model, they look at this as this great example of a democratic socialist paradise. But actually what they have is a system that was championed by Milton Friedman, which is a voucher system. For public schools, mm-hmm. where you can actually, you get this voucher and you can go, you can take it to a public school, you can take it to a private school, to a charter school, any kind of school, and that creates the good incentives that create competition for a better education and that creates better critical thinkers. And I think that's something that we're missing to some extent.
Yeah, and Bernie Sanders pulls out the, as you would call it, the Nordic socialistic example. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, first of all, they're all paying over 50% taxes, including all the taxes that they pay. So
yeah.
Less than half of what they make, they keep. Just think about that.
Well, they also have a way, way lower regulatory burden. They do not
right.
have a lot of the kind of federal interference in bargaining agreements and the kinds of regulatory compliance costs that we do in the United States.
Yeah, but Bernie won't bring that up.
Yeah. No, you never would.
No, but you're right. You're right. They are very much capitalistic in many ways, even more so than we are in certain ways.
Yeah,
like
they have a couple
system.
Of big public programs, and aside from that, they're very capitalist, more so than us in many respects.
So I want to get back, though, and again, we're talking with Daniel Weisslau. He's a millennial. Believe it or not, he doesn't agree that socialism is a good thing. But, Daniel, when was it, if you can remember, when was it that a little light went on in your head and you said to yourself, boy, I don't think socialism's a good idea. Was there any moment or was there a gradual... because I'm just assuming you're a capitalist.
Sure.
So when did that click in your mind that you were a capitalist rather than a socialist?
You know, I was in high school. I'd always had a great respect for a lot of the underlying constitutional principles, and I loved studying in the government classes, all the different Supreme Court stuff. But we had a debate on the presidential candidates at the time, and I actually decided I was going to be the libertarian candidate in the debate, just because I thought it would be interesting. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, and this is an oversimplification, but the liberals are for, you know, sort of more social freedom, but having the government mandate more in terms of your fiscal decisions, and the Republicans tend to be more having the government mandate what you can do socially, but allowing you to decide what you want to do with your money. And I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was this ideology out there, which I came to understand was libertarianism, where you sort of get to make all the decisions.
Right. Exactly. And you mentioned Milton.
So that was
Milton
a light bulb
Friedman.
Moment. And I, uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, you sound like a very, you were precocious. I mean, most kids probably didn't think that deeply. But did you find, like in high school, that you could see a lot of kids just buying into socialism right away? Or was it more on your mind the girls and sports and stuff? Were there ever any of those?
I was a theater kid, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think so. I just think there wasn't a lot of critical thinking in that direction yet. And there were a handful of kids, you know, who were really into thinking about political ideology, and they did buy very much into the socialist, classist type of thinking, because that's what socialism does. That's what Marxism does, is it separates us into different groups and then pits them against one another, rather than what capitalism does, which is where it gives people a platform to freely exchange for the benefit of one another. And that's the problem.
So is there any hope for millennials overall? I mean, if we got 70% of them thinking they'd vote for a socialist, I don't know if they actually would when push came to shove, when they reach the age of 21, and many of them are already that age, of course, but
sure.
do they you know, in 10 years, are these guys, the same group of people, if you went back to them? Would it be more?
Well,
I mean, what do you think?
I'm hoping, I'm kind of hoping that as millennials get older and become more advanced in the workforce and get promotions and make more money, that perhaps they'll start to sort of come around and think about, you know, as they go and start to own real estate and understand the way that property rights work, and what would be entailed by a socialist state, which is really an abrogation of individual freedoms and property rights, because property rights is the bedrock of liberty. And if you think about John Locke and you think about it, the broad theory of property rights, which stems from self-ownership, but it also includes freedom of speech, due process, and the things that people fought over back at the time of Magna Carta, I hope that people will come to think more critically about this.
Boy, if they're like you, they will. And we would have great hope for the millennials. And Daniel, it's a pleasure to have spoken with you. I hope we can speak again down the road.
I do too. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Daniel Weislaw, a millennial and an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Okay, let us take our break. And when we come back, we are going to have our buddy, the proprietor of the Barber Poll, talk to us about what is going on with this impeachment process vote.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? Tune in to the Ameritech Connection every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network. That's 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM. Right, Sharon?
That's right, Mike. We cover it all when it comes to deed-restricted communities. We have the answers to all of your questions and more on the Ameritech Connection every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. We are back on a Friday morning. November 1st already. Holy cow, this year has flown by. Delighted to have the proprietor of the only poll that really matters in this country, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi. And Andrew is up in New York. Andrew, again, our condolences on the passing of your mom. Thank you so much for joining us. Wanted to talk a little bit about what is going on here in this impeachment process. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks for asking. Everything is fine, you know, going down the road, except for this impeachment baloney, huh?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I don't know if you had an opportunity, probably not. You were busy up in New York, but we talked about the name of the whistleblower.
And I know. And the sad part about it is Italian descent, Paul.
You're right.
What is with all these Italians? They got Judge Napolitano. We got this guy Camarelli, whatever his name is. What's wrong with these people? Yeah. They are not Italian. Believe me.
I know. I'm worried about it. So this guy, let's see. He's 33. He's a registered Democrat. He's a holdover from the Obama White House. He worked with Joe Biden. He worked with former CIA Director John Brennan, who was a vocal anti-Trumper.
He's got good credentials, doesn't he?
I mean, I can't. There isn't one thing about him that doesn't scream, I hate Trump. Not one
thing. Well, the whole thing, every one of them scream, I hate Trump. That's all this is about. They look at, you know it and I know it. They've done nothing for 3 freaking years except try to get rid of Trump. And the only reason they're trying to get rid of him, there's only been one smart representative. What was his name there, Green? He says, we got to impeach him. We can't beat him.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. He did. Al Green, I think his name is. You're right. Now,
not the singer. Not the singer. The representative.
Well, maybe it's not Al Green. Was there a singer named Al Green?
I think it is Al Green. Okay. Wasn't there a singer by that name, too?
I don't know. You got me. You got me, my friend. So the vote was 232 to 196 in the House to continue with this, whatever you want to call it. It's not an impeachment.
They're resolute. Paul, listen. It's going to take the Senate 20 minutes to throw this out if it ever gets up
to them. I think you're right.
They're going to say, listen, this is no due process, no nothing. This is an illegal trial. See you later.
I don't even think they would take a vote in the Senate. They're
no.
going to say, we're going to halt it right now. There's nothing here.
That's right.
They take a vote.
I mean, why are they wasting this money? They're just trying to smear his name, Paul.
Well,
this is all about the election.
You know that the Democrats know that they're not going to force Donald Trump out, but they think that if they can keep waving this red flag all through 2020, up until the election, it'll be on the minds of people. That's what they're thinking. But maybe their thinking is going to actually work like a tsunami against them because people will be so upset with the way they've treated this guy.
If you heard people talking in my barbershop, how upset they are about it. Let me tell you something. They're all ready to march on Washington and blow all these people away out of there. You got no idea.
I do have an idea. I feel that way myself sometimes. I do have an idea.
I mean, you know, the American people, we are so fed up with this. They're wasting so much of our tax dollars' money for what?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. They've done absolutely nothing. Listen, if you and I did what they're doing on our jobs, we'd have been out the door a long time ago. I don't know why they don't take a thing to the Supreme Court and tell them this is no good. What's the big deal? Why can't they be stopped?
Very, very scary. Now, Joe Manchin is a Democrat from West Virginia, okay? And he was asked, I think it was by Fox News, if he would support Bernie Sanders if Sanders was president running against Trump. He said
no way.
No, I won't. Way. He said he'd vote for Trump. He's a Democrat. He's going to vote for Trump. He said, it's not practical where I come from.
It's not practical where anybody comes from, Paul.
Exactly.
And then you're already talking like 70% of the millennials. They want socialism and communism. You know why, Paul? They've been brainwashed by our beautiful colleges and schools. What do you think this core education was about?
And if you think about, if you substitute the word media for college, the media is trying to brainwash, in my opinion, people the same way that the college has tried to brainwash these kids growing up about the merits of liberal and social and commu and all of those other isms. So now we got the media that are, of course, in the corner. I say the media, the mainstream media, that are in the corner of the Democrats are helping. They're like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. They're playing the tune and drawing all the people towards them, all the kids towards them. I mean, go ahead.
I was surprised that Catherine Herridge left Fox and went to CBS. I mean, what's going on here?
I did not know that until last night. I was watching
another,
Fox.
That
was a gut punch. I thought Catherine Herridge, I always respect how good she is, and she's been there for a long time. And then she's going to one of the most liberal news organizations in the country.
That's right.
They must have thrown bucket loads of money at her.
They had to. They said, look, here's one here that's been saying she was a conservative. Look, she's a true liberal. It's just proof that anybody could be bought, huh?
Exactly. I don't know that she would change her stripes. I always thought of her as being conservative, but maybe she's just a straight down the road journalist, and you know she goes where the best. Can't blame her if they're throwing all that money.
You know where the money is. That's right. Hey, I'd probably do the same thing.
maybe her buddy, not her buddy, but Shepard Smith might join her at CBS once.
But Paul, you know what they're doing is totally disgusting. This guy Adam Schiff. I don't understand why the Republicans. They've got to be something they can do. Or they're just waiting for the hammer to fall on them because this is going to turn into a big television soap opera. Because once these indictments start coming down, if they do, we've been told how long they're going to. But once this starts, what's going to be happening? It's a civil war between the two.
Well, this is assuming that they're going to vote for an impeachment. And I'm not sure that they're going to take the vote. I mean it. I'm not sure that they will. I think Pelosi, who is not as stupid as she looks, is realizing they didn't get one Republican vote.
They lost two Democrats. That's right. Now, but that's proof right there. Listen, the Republicans are not going to give up their power. Okay, it's that simple. They get rid of Trump, there goes their power.
There's another thing to take a look at. Number one, the critical states that Trump won, including Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, the polling there is against his being impeached. And if that's the case, I think Pelosi's no dope. She sees that.
Well, they know they're going to lose the House. We're going to keep the Senate. They're going to lose the House, and Trump's going to be, he's going to be bowling 300, buddy, the whole time.
So what are the odds, in your opinion, what are the odds that Pelosi will call for an impeachment vote?
Well, it's a tough one. I don't think she's going to.
I don't either.
I think that, they're just... an impeachment resolution, an impeachment request. What do you think the public's going to do when they put out there, all they want to put out there is what they wanted the people to hear? You know what I'm saying? People aren't stupid. Again, 50% of them are. But, they're going to put out exactly what they want to put out. The Republicans can't do nothing.
Yeah, I've never thought
they can't ask a question without being approved by Schiff. And what that's going to be like.
That's ridiculous. And then now we have the other side of the coin, which is that Barr and Durham and those others in the Justice Department that have gone back and spent all of this time investigating what was going on during the 2016 presidential election and what they were trying to do to Trump are about ready. You and I have said this now for a long time, but unless they get wobbly, they're about ready to now produce the report. They're about ready to produce the report. And Durham, the guy that's been doing all of the investigating, who's supposed to be a straight arrow, has started to impanel a grand jury. Now, if he's going to do that, that means he thinks some indictments are coming down.
That's right. He's got to have indictments. The indictment's got to go before a grand jury.
Yeah. So let's say that is about to break. Maybe let's just assume that it breaks sometime between now and December the 1st. How do you think that will affect the decision on whether or not to impeach Trump? Do you think that Pelosi will go, oh, my God, we've got to waive all
it? It all depends on if she got an indictment against her. She might not be able to call for an impeachment.
I didn't think of that. You think she's involved in some sort of nefarious thing as well?
Well, let's face it, they're all running scared. I mean, there's ties with her son, with Hunter Biden, and Kerry's son, and what's his name from Utah there. Yeah, I mean, they're all involved in this Ukrainian oil companies, you know what I mean, together. So there could be a lot of indictments coming down we don't know about. Just like Hillary Clinton talking about running. She might not be able to. She's under indictment or investigation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of talk going on, but, when the ball comes thrown back, we're going to see how many people are going to try and dodge it, huh?
I just think, I think like you do, I think that this whole impeachment imbroglio is slowly starting to dissipate. I really think it's slowly starting to dissipate. We will see what will happen, but boy, oh boy, stay tuned for more.
I think Adam Schiff is going to be one sorry boy when this all comes down.
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
I feel very sorry for Mr. Camarelli there because his name is out in the streets now.
It is.
He's not going to be a well-liked person. And you know what they say
by the way, it's Charamella. Get your Italian names correct, please.
Well, I didn't have it memorized in my head. I thought it was Camarelli or whatever.
I'm reading it.
I tell you what, he's a done Italian boy. There's no question about that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. Anyway, it gets curiouser and curiouser, as Alice used to say in Wonderland. So, Andrew, again, thank you very much. And again, our thoughts and prayers with you on the passing of your mom.
Paul.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much, buddy.
Of course.
And I'll see you as soon as I get back Wednesday.
Safe travels, my friend.
All right, buddy. Be good.
All right. There he is, Andrew the Master Barber. His mom was 98 years old. Isn't that amazing? What a long, beautiful life she had. All right. Going to take our final break. When we come back, this is All Saints Day. You Christians should know that. So in honor of that, one of the things we're going to do is give you the top 10 most influential saints.
I don't know about that. As many times as we've loved and we've shared love and made love, it doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, babe. It's just not enough.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on Tan Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back for the final segment here on All Saints Day, November the 1st. And by the way, President Trump has officially announced, although he was born and bred in New York, he officially announced yesterday he's changed his permanent residence. Guess where? Palm Beach. Yes, indeed. Mar-a-Lago will now be his permanent residence. He says, I cherish New York and the people of New York and always will. But unfortunately, despite the fact that I pay millions of dollars in city, state, and local taxes each year, I have been treated very badly by the political leaders of both the city and state. Few have been treated worse. He said, I hated having to make this decision, but in the end, it will be best for all concerned. As president, I will always be there to help New York and the great people of New York. It will always have a special place in my heart. And we get a lot of people moving down from New York, but it's because of the taxes. Among other things. Let's face it, it's just more expensive up there, and I don't blame them. He was spending more time at Mar-a-Lago than he was spending at his Trump Tower in New York City. So, can you blame him for doing it? I don't think so. We don't pay any state income tax. Can you imagine how much Donald Trump would save if he's a so-called permanent resident of Florida? He also has a place in New Jersey he goes to. I guess it's near his, he's got a golf course there. And also, of course, he's living at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. We know that. There's a private golf club he lives at in Bedminster, New Jersey. But he spent 99 days in Florida since becoming president, and only 20 days at the Trump Tower in New York. So that should give you an indication. Okay. Ed, I want to talk to you about the World Series because we had our last show on Wednesday, and then the final game of the series, and Washington wins it. I think the score was 6-2, and I do believe you thought that they would win that final game. And as you know, this is the first World Series where every away game was won by the visitor. whatever you want to say there. So Washington won all four of its games in Houston. What's going on?
Yeah, and they said that this was the first time that all wins were on the road by the eventual winning team.
Yeah.
So
isn't that the strangest thing?
Yeah.
That really, and the first time it's ever happened. So you had, first of all, to do it, you have to have four games away, which Washington had, because in a seven-game series. And because Houston, I don't know if it's because of the All-Star game anymore. There used to be the All-Star game determined who would get the seventh game.
Right.
Is that still the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I guess the American League must have won the All-Star game.
Yep, they did.
So what does this bode for? Well, let me connect this to, I don't know if we can, but let's connect it to the Tampa Bay Rays, who, by the way, are asking more and more serious questions about actually splitting their home games with Montreal. I don't know that. Do you think the St. Petersburg people, where the stadium's located, would ever agree to something like that?
No, and I saw the press conference originally when our owner came out and said, Stu Sternberg came out and announced that to the crowd, how many times he had to catch his breath, because it seemed like he was getting ready to throw a trainload of horse manure out there and see how much of it sticks. Well, they actually believe this guy. Not only does he want one new stadium, now he wants two new stadiums, one in each city. That's just not going to happen.
No.
There's just no way. You know, maybe if he stayed in the tropic, he'd get half, maybe. But to say I want a new stadium here for only half a year, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
Not going to happen.
What are the chances, do you think, Ed? I know this is kind of an on-the-spot question. What do you think the chances are of just remodeling the Trop?
You know, I was...
Think about it.
It's kind of hard. I think what it lacks is everybody says it's kind of like a dungeon in there.
Yeah, why can't you redo it?
Why can't in the outfield wall, why can't that be windows there exposing the sunlight or something
can't
like that?
Can't we tear that tarpaulin or whatever it is above the thing
God,
down?
You'd be cheaper to start over again.
Okay, then why not start over? I mean,
that's what they say, but you have to have a roof here. You have to have air conditioning. It's just, you know, in one hand he says, well, to stay here, I need a roof. And then he says, the reason he wants to do half here and half there, because he'll do the first half here of April, May, and part of June, and do it outdoors where it belongs, because it won't be that hot by then. And then he'll go to Montreal for the second half, where it's still gorgeous out, where baseball should be played outside. So on one hand, he's saying, I need a roof to stay full-time, but half the season's good open doors, open air. But, you know, he's just all over.
There's no way that St. Petersburg or
I question
Pinellas,
the timing of it and everything is just...
They're not going to... Especially if he says he wants to play half the game somewhere else, they're not going to fund anything for him. Not a penny.
And then the whole thing with him, you know, with the wild card game in Oakland, and he brings the head guy from Montreal's group as a guest to the game. He said, oh, he just bought him some tickets so he could sit in the... Well, then why'd you parade him out on the field for photos and
stuff?
Well,
he wants to scare the people here in Tampa Bay to start looking to fund something for him, like a new stadium.
You know, he's not going to make the money he makes here in Montreal with TV and all that. He's not going to get it. So I honestly think it's just a ploy to try to get the stadium built. And, you know, if he'd put half in, they'd put half in, then they got to find a site, of course. And they have to have some sort of light rail to get to it. But we'll see.
So he's stuck here until
2027.
Yeah, so that's another 8 years. And do you think that the Rays will actually still be, I know this is a crazy question, still be here in 2027?
I think so. I don't think they're going anywhere, to tell you the truth. I think something's going to come down to it. You know, and then, of course, the mayor of Tampa, she was at the playoff game and saw how vibrant the Trop was with people in the seats. And, oh, we got to try to work this thing out. Let's renegotiate again. I think it works out. It may take a couple more years.
Well, you're an optimist. All right. Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much. And that Now it's time to transition, and I don't know how you do it, but this is All Saints Day, okay, November 1st. All Hallows Eve, if you think about it, is the eve of, you know, Halloween was always a celebration of the witches and goblins because the following day was All Saints Day. That's how they followed
it. This would be easy.
So we have come up with the top 10 most influential saints, and this comes from the Catholic Exchange poll. They actually polled their members. So without further ado, here are the top 10 most influential saints. Number 10, St. Catherine of Siena and St. Francis of Assisi are tied. Hard to pick between these two. I remember St. Francis was like the patron saint of animals. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You don't seem to be interested, Ed. Weren't you a good Catholic boy?
No.
Oh, okay. You weren't. You were a bad Catholic boy?
No, I wasn't a Catholic
boy. Oh. You were a bad non-Catholic.
No, I was a good non-Catholic.
You were a good non-Catholic. Fair enough. Number 9. Saint Athanasius. I didn't know the saint too well. Athanasius. He defied three emperors and numerous heretical bishops to preserve Orthodox Christology for all time. Okay? There you go. Number 8. John the Baptist. You've heard of him, right? John the Baptist baptized Jesus. He was the indispensable one to open the way for the Lord. All right, number 7, St. Peter. St. Peter was one of the 12 apostles, the rock, as the Lord would say, and he took command of the church from the get-go after the crucifixion. Number 6, St. Jerome translated the Bible into the Vulgate, the common or everyday language of the people in his time. Number 5, St. Joseph. Let's see. The man chosen to play, pray, teach, and protect the Son of God. And, of course, the husband of the Virgin Mary. All right. Number 4, St. Patrick. He's the patron saint of Ireland. He went there, converted the good part of an entire people and culture. All right. Number 3. St. Augustine. St. Augustine, Florida is named for him. Let's see. What was about him? He I'm trying to find it. St. Augustine would not meet his peer until the time of St. Thomas Aquinas. His role in shepherding Christianity from the Roman imperial era to the start of the Middle Ages. All right. Number 2. Mother Teresa. We all know Mother Teresa. And this is pretty good for Mother Teresa. She's now a saint. And she did all of the wonderful things for the poorest of the poor. All right? All right, Ed. Being the biblical scholar that you are, I decided I will ask you who you think is the most influential saint that came up in this poll.
I'm going to say Drew Brees.
Drew Brees. Okay. All right. I'm going to give you one more hint. It ain't him, but you know the name.
Sean Payton.
All right. I'm not going to goof around with you anymore. The most influential saint is the Apostle Paul. Mm. That's what I was named for.
Gotcha.
He got knocked off his horse. He was the one that converted most of what Turkey is and most of Asia Minor and Rome and Greece, just to name a few stops along the way. St. Paul. All right. Thank you so very much for being with us. We will be back Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Always remember that freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.